this week's sportscaster is Zoe George on the line from Zoomland. Kia ora, Zoe. Welcome back to Nights.
Hello. It's always lovely to be on the show with you, Brian.
Good to have you back. The cycling review. Now, you followed this story pretty closely. Before we begin, though, Olivia Podmore. Now, has there actually been an official coroner's ruling on the cause of her death, which sparked this review in the first place?
Not yet. So last week, questions were asked of the reviewers in high performance sport on whether it was going to be completed in the next 6 weeks or so. But the coroner's spokesperson told me last week that that's not true. They're still gathering evidence and going through that process. And these things take years. So I don't imagine it's going to be finished anytime soon. And then once their findings are done, in consultation with the Podmore families, they'll make a decision on whether an inquest will go ahead. So at the moment, the way that we talk about it is we say that it's a suspected suicide because the coroner hasn't ruled what happened just yet.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that.
That's okay.
Now, the review itself, what was it trying to find out? What questions was it asking? Just remind us briefly of that, Zoe.
Well, it was looking into the high performance program, the environment. It was unpicking the culture, whether the recommendations from the original Heron review in 2018 were taken up and used, and what was found that some of them were put in but were not implemented. And so it covered a vast array. It was 104 pages long with 27 recommendations. It took me 6 hours to read it cover to cover. It was intense, and it covered everything from culture of medals over athletes, favoritism, financial instabilities, contracts, a disconnect between staff and athletes, the concerning use of non-disclosure agreements, the centralized high performance model, staff hiring practices, and a lack of consideration of women's health in that environment. So it was incredibly extensive, and I was in Cambridge last week with a group of athletes when it was released to the public. We had Phil Holden, the board chair from Cycling New Zealand, who they were at a press conference in Auckland. There was Mike Heron QC and Sarah Lieberman, two of the reviewers, and high performance chief executive Raylene Castle. And so I was with a group of athletes at the time, and that started off with Cycling New Zealand and High Performance Sport New Zealand apologising to first Olivia Podmore's family and then to the others who had suffered and still continue to suffer with trauma that was caused with that environment. And the athletes that I was with at that time, they just were still and silent, and they didn't react, and they were just listening. And as the press conference went on, the issue of women's health was raised, and that was quite interesting because they recommended that there be a women's health specialist brought into the environment, that there needed to be more education around things like menstruation and pregnancies and Red S, which is the energy deficiency disorder that female athletes can have, where they're not putting enough energy in and energy out, and that can impact things like their periods and their performance. But, what High Performance Sport New Zealand was found with them within the review was that they almost didn't consider women's health a performance matter, and that female athletes were encouraged to go and see their GPs about quote-unquote non-performance related health matters. So when Sarah Lieberman was talking about that, it was fascinating because the female athletes I was with, they almost threw up their arms in celebration. They were like, yes, our health is part of our performance, and it impacts all of our performance, and not just in sport but in life. So it was very telling. There is hopeful optimism that things will change for the better. And I think as well, though, that this is not just about cycling. Yes, this was about cycling, but this is addressing the whole high-performance sport system and network. And the reviewers have asked for high-performance sport to really seriously look at it and to make some substantial changes.
Was it the women's side of cycling that this investigation focused on?
It was all parts of cycling. But for me, what came through very, very strongly in it was that there was a lot of focus on women within this. And time and time again, Brian, over the last how many years now have we seen review after review after review? We've had hockey, football, we've had one previously into cycling, we've had gymnastics, we've had rugby, we've had welfare issues in canoe racing. And there's one similarity in that, and that it's all women speaking up about the climate and the environment that they're in within these systems and these structures. So there was a lot of female voices in there, and the athletes that I did talk to, they said they have been heard. They felt like they've been heard through this review, and they are incredibly optimistic that, and hopeful that things will change, not only in their sport, but in general, in sport in general, particularly in the high performance level, where one of the biggest things has been looking at the funding structure, because if you want to get funding, you've got to have medals. Mm. That's the way it's been. So the reviewers have asked for that to be looked at. They've also asked for athlete agreements and athlete pay or and sponsorship to be looked at. And there were stories that I was hearing, and I've heard from a range of sports, but within cycling, of athletes not being able to afford to pay their rent, not being able to afford to eat properly, to be able to afford the food that their nutritionists have recommended to them so that they can perform at their peak. So that has been quite fascinating as well, looking at whether these people are contractors or they're employees, and if they're employees, then they have to be paid at least the minimum wage. What was interesting was that last week, Raylene Castle said, you know, that this funding from High Performance Sport New Zealand, which ultimately comes from the taxpayer, it comes from us, is not a wage. It is like it's a grant to help them get where they need to go. But for many of them, they were told that they should not work, that they should focus on their sport, and that they were at the beck and call of their coaches for what time they would train. And sometimes they were only given 24 hours notice on what time they needed to be at the velodrome or wherever they were training. So they couldn't have a life.
Can I ask you, because there's something that's popped into my head here, and that is the conditions for the women in terms of their remuneration and support while they're in a high-performance facility, how do that compare with the men? Because I'm wondering why it is that as you pointed out, a lot of the cases where there's been an investigation and we've found that the players were maybe getting put under too much pressure, affecting their mental health, their happiness, they're female.
Within the high performance structure, it's all same pay whether you're male or female, but it all depends on whether you win a gold medal at the Olympic Games or at the Commonwealth Games or wherever you place, and anything can throw that off. So it's performance based, right? So you might have a serious accident and get concussed and do not get in the top eight in the world, or you miss out on your gold medal, then you're going to miss out on what they used to refer to as pegs. So they are re-looking at that again. They've been asked to re-look at that again, but it's not necessarily the funding of female athletes that's been questioned. It's the rest of it. It is the systems that have been originally put in place for male athletes that have then just kind of been plonked on women. And we know that that doesn't work, because men and women, you know, women aren't little men. We are very different. And we do have things like periods and pregnancies that need to be taken into consideration when we are participating and engaging in sport at all levels. So that's one of the big things that came out of this review.
What's the chance of the whole model changing? And the thing that drives this is our desire as a nation, as expressed through the government on behalf of the taxpayers, for us to win more in international sport. Isn't that what it's about? That's what's driven it. We want to win more golds, more world championships. And on that level, Cycling New Zealand has performed magnificently. At the last Tokyo Olympics, it did really well. So, but that's the thing. What we're talking about here seems to be the dark side of that. Mm. What happens if you don't quite make the grade? So, but how can we hope that the athletes won't be put under the same pressure if we still have the same goals that drive the business?
So this is it. It's about changing it, right? And yes, okay, we love winners, we love gold medals, but at what cost do they come at? And we know that this has come at the cost of a life. And we have talked about this issue so many times, Brian, over the last several years with gymnastics and all of that stuff. And what we're talking about is changing the system to focus on a human-centered approach, a human first, athlete second, and making sure that they're good. Because when they're good, their results are going to be good. And so that's something that came out really strongly in this review, is making sure that the welfare of the athletes, and that includes so many other things, including the likes of the centralization model, which is in Cambridge for the cycling, whether that's contributing to welfare, and we know that it is contributing and impacting negatively on athlete welfare in various ways. Same with the treatment of women and the way that their health has been sidelined within the structure. So it's about going, reprioritizing, going, yes, we love winners. Winners are awesome. We love them. But we can get back there. First, we've got to look after the people. We've got to make sure our people are good. And, you know, one of the things that came out of this as well, like I said, the centralization high performance model. So I was heading out on Wednesday. This shows you how small Cambridge really is. It's a fishbowl. I went to a local cafe. I sat down. I set up my laptop. I was working away. And there was a couple of people sitting at a table next to me, and I didn't look over. I was just busy working, and all of a sudden they started talking about the cycling review and a few other things that were related to it.
Did you put your hand up and say, I'm a sports journalist working on that?
When they got up and left, I clocked very quickly that it was an athlete, and when they got up to leave, I introduced myself, and I was like, I'm not stalking you, but this is just serendipitous that I'm here. And I am so sorry, you know, that you've lost your friend in this manner. And you know, I wish you all the very best for the future. And I have hope, just like they had hope too. And that is so tiny. One of the things that they identified about these athletes moving to these centralized places is that they are away from home and away from their support networks. You know, Olivia Podmore moved up from Christchurch to be in that environment. So, and she was trying to make her family there from the people and her friends that I've spoken to. She was trying to make her own little Cambridge family there. So it's tiny. It's a beautiful town. Don't get me wrong. It's just a lovely town, but it's such a fishbowl, and you can't go anywhere without bumping into an elite athlete.
That centralization thing though, Zoe, all that money thrown into, you know, I went and visited the Velodrome, and I thought, oh, this is a great, of course, this is a few years ago. What a great facility, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, this is marvelous. But is that a mistake now? Do we have to be a bit more, do we have to allow some of these athletes, or a lot of them maybe at an initial level, to develop at home? Do we take people away from home when we spot the talent too soon?
Well, this is the thing. Some of these athletes are coming to this environment when they're 17. You know, they're still teenagers. I mean, I moved out of home at 17 and moved to a completely different part of New Zealand. I ended up boarding with a family and went to university. But you're in a very high stress environment when you go into something like a high performance sport environment. What they've asked for is for this to be reconsidered, whether centralization can still happen in some shape or form, where we bring the teams together at certain times of the year while they're preparing for big events, and with the hubs around the country, which, as we know, four of them were shut down last year because of a lack of funding. One has just reopened in Southland. So whether these hubs can play a role in developing our talent in the regions, and then when they need to, they come together in a central area like Cambridge. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that might happen, one of the other things that was quite fascinating was looking at the way that people are hired and brought into this space, that they talked about better consultation and more robust hiring practices, and then they go and shoulder tap Karen Smith, who's come from the NZOC, to be the change manager in this space without kind of any form of consultation. Both Cycling New Zealand and High Performance Sport New Zealand have defended that choice to hire her and put her in that position. But it almost goes against what was written in the review. So, Interesting times ahead, I think, Brian.
Do you think, Zoe, we've kind of reached, have we gone through all sport now and uncovered most of the stuff? Or, I mean, I'm just starting to wonder whether maybe there are some of the blokes we might, because I sometimes wonder about the scouting for rugby talent of all codes, and often the talented boy, they are boys, they're only 13, 14, and they've got talent, we want to grab them before somebody else does. You know, how many people are left behind from that, because only a few will go on to become professionals?
Yeah, that's right. It's something that we should absolutely think about. And interesting to note that today Warriors player Chanel Harris-Tavita has decided to walk away from NRL at just the age of 23. He says he needs a break. And when you're in that environment from such a young age, you know, I guess you work so hard to get to that point, right? You're like, yes, I'm finally here. And you're like, oh, actually, I don't know if I want this anymore. But yeah, it's fascinating. It is really interesting. But I really hope that this is a wake-up call, that this review, that every single sports body in this country is reading this review and taking its findings seriously, because the reviewers have asked every single sports body to address the policies, the practices, and the environments that still enable inequality. And I really hope that we're not here again and again, Brian, talking about another review, because how many reviews have we talked about in the last 2.5 years? And it's the same issues that are popping up again and again and again. So when are we going to learn? When's this going to change?
Zoe, it's been great talking with you again. Thanks very much for your time.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
Likewise. Thank you, Zoe. Zoe George, back with more sport from her perspective in around about 6 weeks from now.